it's this delicate balance that we have to keep treading, that line, right? Where we're honoring and actually really loving the intense parts of ourselves, but also modulating amongst other people, but, and most importantly, not letting that modulation affect our celebration of who we really are.
Welcome to the Embracing Intensity podcast, brought to you from Quinn Mountain Retreat in the Columbia River Gorge. I'll be sharing interviews with powerful, gifted, creative change makers who use their fire in a positive way. My name is Aurora Remember Holtzman. After years of feeling too much, I finally realized that intensity in the form of excitability is actually the source of my greatest power. Now, instead of beating myself up about not measuring up to my own self-imposed standards, I'm on a mission to help people embrace their own intensity so that they can share their gifts with the world through coaching, educational assessment, retreats, and other tools to help tune in to your potential. Today's interview is with Julie Skolnick, who I met at the SANG conference, Supporting the Emotional Needs of the Gifted, through Dr. Melanie Hayes, who was also on the podcast a while back. And she has this super exciting upcoming conference called 2 Days of 2E, Twice Exceptionality. So I'm super excited to see this. There's a lot of really amazing guests that are going to be on it. And there's also some continuing education hours that they've set up through a university. And I'm going to be looking into seeing if I can make our own Washington State clock hours for it as well. Definitely check it out, 2 Days of 2E, and I hope you enjoy the show. Welcome to Embracing Intensity. Today I am super thrilled to have Julie Skolnick, MAJD, founder of With Understanding Comes Calm, LLC. Passionately guides parents of gifted and distractible children, mentors 2E adults, and advises educators and professionals on bringing out the best and raising self-esteem in their students and clients. Julie serves as secretary to the Maryland Superintendent's Gifted and Talented Advisory Council, is the Maryland liaison for supporting the emotional needs of the gifted, SANG, reviews Parenting Strand conference proposals, and is a committee member for the National Association for Gifted Children, NAGC, and serves as an advisor to the G Word feature documentary currently in production. Through Let's Talk 2E, the digital media division of With Understanding Comes Calm, Julie produces 2 days of 2E virtual conference. A frequent speaker and prolific writer, including her monthly newsletter, Gifted and Distractible, Julie is also the mother of 3 twice exceptional children who keep her on her toes and uproariously laughing. Welcome, Julie.
Thank you, Aurora. I'm thrilled to be here.
And I'm excited about your 2 days of 2E conference coming up. And what are the dates of that?
So we launch October 26th and 27th, and on those 2 days, Friday and Saturday, the sessions will unfold just like you were at an in-person conference, one at a time, at a specific time. But after that, we're actually on demand through April 2019.
Oh, nice. Very cool. So tell me a little bit about yourself and what you are intensely passionate about.
So you mentioned my 3 kids who do keep me on my toes and uproariously laughing for sure, and I am intensely passionate about raising them. Through raising them, I became intensely passionate about guiding parents and training teachers, and most recently sitting down with clinicians and helping them look at their caseload through a 2E lens. So I'm passionate, really passionate about circling the wagons of all the adults to help support and help 2E kids reach their potential and really strengthen their self-esteem. So the bottom line is, if I had to tell you one thing, Aurora, it would be self-esteem, building self-esteem in 2E individuals.
Awesome. So tell me a little bit about your personal brand of intensity. What does intensity look like for you?
So You know, it's so interesting when we talk about intensity, which is what this awesome podcast is all about. The first thing people think of is something negative or challenging. But when you look at Zebrowski's overexcitabilities, right, that present in five areas, intellectual, emotional, and imaginational, psychomotor, and sensual or sensory, there's the pluses and the minuses, right? Because I like to say if you can plug into the world in this intense, organic way, it can be really fulfilling. So I would have to say my favorite thing to talk about my own brand of intensity, which is really, it continues to unfold, and I think authentic, organic intensity tends to do that, the positive pieces of intensity. When I sit with a client, or I'm talking even with a colleague, it could happen on this podcast even, I get full body chills when I know I'm connecting, when I know I'm saying something somebody needs to hear, when I feel lucky enough and blessed enough that I see a change in somebody's face, like there's an aha moment. And I just feel like that is such a gift to connect in that way. And so often we are told that we need to turn down our intensity. We need to dampen our intensity. But I feel, oh, there goes the chill. I feel like we all have to realize that this is a gift. Like there's some dimension out there that we're connecting to. And yeah, we have to take into account that we're walking in the world with other people. And so yes, we do have to adjust so that it's not overwhelming for them. And that's really hard for kids.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that connectivity for me, that is a really awesome and personal intensity.
Mm, so true. So how do you think that your intensity affected you growing up?
Cool question, because I think so much of the work that I do taps into how we as gifted or 2E parents grew up ourselves. And I think that people who hear me speak know that I'm all about personal connection. I just talked about it a little bit in my own intensity. And I think that growing up, I had all five of those Dabrowski and still have all five of those Dabrowski overexcitabilities in different ways. And so I had to figure out how to navigate. I had to have a lot of positive self-talk because, and I know from raising my own kids, the intellectual intensity or overexcitability that you can have, I mean, my curiosity, my ability to make connections and think about things in a deep way, personal way, and then also connecting to all different topics in the universe was different than my typical peer group. So I learned to get involved in a lot of different things because not one thing was going to feed my soul. And I learned to, you know, we hear about the imposter syndrome, particularly with girls who deny or think that they can't possibly be as fill in the blank as everybody says they are or they used to think they were. And that's a real potential risk for our intense females, because when you start to dial down or hide parts of who you are, you can actually internalize that. So while it's this delicate balance that we have to keep treading, that line, right, where we're honoring and actually really loving the intense parts of ourselves, but also modulating amongst other people, but, and most importantly, not letting that modulation affect our celebration of who we really are. And so when we find somebody, I mean, I personally found my very best friend the first day of college when I was 18. To this day, she's still my very best friend. And I was the luckiest person to find her. We just connect in so many ways and it's easy, right? Like it's so hard. So often it's so hard with other people. Hopefully you find a partner or spouse. Hopefully you find a friend. You know, you just need one friend. It doesn't have to be an age peer. I'm always talking about our kids finding interest peers, you know, and you have to be kind to yourself. Oh my God, I don't even remember the question I was answering anymore, Aurora. I got all fired up in my own intensity.
Well, we were talking about how it affected you growing up.
Oh, okay. Well, did I answer it?
I believe so. Were there any cultural factors that you think affected how you expressed yourself?
So how I expressed myself, maybe. I think when I think about how I expressed myself, I come from a pretty strong Jewish identity background. And I remember attending public school, but on the weekends attending Hebrew school, and realizing and recognizing the juxtaposition of when you went to Hebrew school, you hugged your friends hello. You didn't do that in public school.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that's such an intensity. It certainly was comfortable, and I loved having that closeness with peers who I identified on yet another level, culturally, religious-wise. I was very involved in causes, really important causes for people who were experiencing anti-Semitism, particularly in Russia at that time. And so I think getting involved in those activities, being president of my youth group, you know, that type of stuff. So maybe it went toward my intensity of, you know, wanting to connect with people, wanting to do something good in the world, which I think is so important for intense people to feed their souls, to do work that they feel is good, to do work that they feel affects people positively.
Yeah, I think that connection and community, I experienced that with the UU youth group growing up, and I definitely think that helps with being able to connect on a broader level. I think a lot of people who see, you know, they think there's no one out there who would get them or understand them. When you have more that solid foundation of community, and I think it definitely helps as we get into adulthood. And Tony, you mentioned the hugging thing, because that was true for me as well. But when I went to college, I was just having this conversation with a friend who was talking about touch deprivation. And how she used to think she really didn't need it, but now she's realizing, like, what she was missing out on. And I just remembered in college, it was actually a Jewish friend of mine who was the very first person to hug me in college.
We're very huggy.
And I remember it, like, to this day, because I was so touch-deprived in college after having, you know, very touchy friends in youth group. And so I still have that fond memory of that moment of the first hug in college, because I, you know, didn't have that connection in school. So,
well, you know, there's a whole, in my monthly blog, you mentioned, so my newsletter Gifted and Distractible, which is free and monthly, I also have a blog that I post in as part of the newsletter. And I, in one of my blogs, I had been doing some research and learning about hug therapy, which is like a thing now, which is so depressing to me that it's a thing. But I mean, it's great that it's a thing, that it's there, because people obviously need it. But I think that there's a lot of deprivation on a lot of grounds, in a lot of ways, in a lot of places, because of technology. And that's a whole other part that I do a lot of talking and writing about. And I think it actually is an extraordinarily sensory, intense experience, technology, and a little bit difficult to unplug or to discern reality when you get too far deep in there. And that can be dangerous for our folks.
So did you ever feel like you toned yourself down or tuned yourself out?
Well, sort of in what I talked about a little bit earlier, when you're with peers who, you know, roll their eyes at your interests because maybe rather than attending a party, you know, as a teenager, you're interested in some important cause, you have to kind of, it was funny for me in school, instead of having like one group of friends, I was friends with like a couple of kids in each group, in quotes, each clique or whatever. And I enjoyed that. There's a downside to that because, you know, if you're not part of a group, identified as part of a group in high school, that can be hard, right, or alienating. But I really felt like that helped me keep true to myself as opposed to identifying with a specific place. I've never been, talk to my parents, I've never been one to tone down myself. But that being said, you know, you don't want to intimidate people. You don't want to make people feel bad. You want to be able to connect with people. So I have this conversation all the time with my own kids. My kids are 17, 15, and 9. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the older two, you know, and they're highly profoundly gifted, and they have different learning differences. And, you know, being that level of gifted also comes with a whole cocktail of challenges in the world. You know, you're a tiny percentage. And so I'm always talking to them about cost benefit analysis, right? Weighing the pros and cons, you know, what's the goal, man? Yeah, I hear you. I hear that is like the most interesting thing to you on the planet right now, and that you could talk about it like every day, all day long. But if the goal is to hang out with other people, you may not want to talk about that all day, every day, you know? So yes, do we all have to modulate our intensities because we are outliers? I mean, you know, if you look at a bell curve of intensities, you're doing this podcast because people are on the right end of that bell curve. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we have to sort of, but again, most importantly is staying true to yourself and enjoying who you are and understanding that this is who you are. And if you're crying at a Maxwell House coffee commercial, then that's okay, man. Mm-hmm. You know? I probably just dated myself because that was an old commercial, but anyway. I don't even think we have commercials anymore. Everything's on demand.
There are some, but yeah, they're easier to skip.
You know, I mean, it's so pervasive that the gifted press during the elections, the presidential elections, really warned against watching too much of the debates because they were so acrimonious for we emotionally overexcitable folks. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just everywhere. So you kind of have to know who you are. And if you do have to dial down, that's okay. Forgive yourself and be okay with that and just move on, man. Be in the moment and know that who you are is exactly who you should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that comment about the news, my most recent interview, which would be the one before this, with Andrea Renee, she does coaching as activism and was talking about, you know, when everything just feels too much out in the world, you know, finding that one thing that you can do and do that and then make sure that you self-care along the way. And that really kind of struck me because I think that we are tempted to want to do everything, you know, we want to fix it all.
I'm so glad you're saying that. So my blog and my newsletter, which will come out next week, it's always the first week of the month, my blog is called Don't Just Do Something, Stand There.
Yeah.
And it's all about how to modulate, how to role model what we want our kids to do, how to, sometimes we just got to let go and let the world unfold around us. And that's okay.
So was there ever a time when you felt like your intensity got out of control?
Yeah. I mean, you know, people do things and you take it personally. Kids do or don't do things and you react. It's an interesting question because intensity by definition is somewhat not in control.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to be intense, again, I focus really, I mean, this is what I do with clients all day long. I'm all about the positive reframe. I'm all about the strength base. So being out of control is such a negative, maybe my reaction to this question could be considered intense because I don't like that moniker of out of control.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, sure. Have I yelled and screamed at my kids at times? Yep, that's happened. Have I gotten really angry at people I love? Yep, that's happened. Have I slammed doors? Yep, that's happened. It's so funny. I was talking to a friend the other day who's actually a psychologist and we're just neighbors and friends. And she was telling me how her daughter was so upset that she slammed the door. And I was like, once? You know? What planet are you living on? Because I'm living on a different planet. But, you know, that's okay. You know, I really feel, Aurora, like every moment can be a learning moment and a moment for growth, right? We want our kids to understand that growth mindset. We want to know that when you quote unquote make a mistake, you can learn from it. And so I actually think these are the best moments for learning and for growing. What somebody talked to me once about, you know, what does it mean to live life, right? For kids who are depressed or anxious, we have a high suicide rate in our population of gifted and twice exceptional. And a colleague was talking to me about how it's so important to remember that what you're doing right now is living life. It's not like, oh, when I can, or if I only could, that then I'd be living life. Actually, now we're living life. And so I don't want to think about it as out of control. I want to think about it as me being me. And if it wasn't the right choice or the right way to be, then geez, I got to think about how I can do that a different way next time. Mm-hmm. And I need to talk to all the people that it might have affected. And guess what? If those people happen to be my loved ones, and particularly my kids, then I'm role modeling to them because they're probably going to experience the same cycle.
Yeah, so true. So tell me a little bit about how you use your fire for good.
Well, I think, you know, working with this population, I started out, you said it was nice of you, you mentioned my master's and my law degree. So I started out as a practicing law, and then I had these three kids, and all of a sudden I really needed to learn a lot of stuff about stuff I didn't know, and I actually started down the path of learning about ADHD, not realizing gifted meant anything except for smart, which it was kind of like, duh, no kidding. So, and learning about ADHD was a really great journey, 3 years, everything I possibly could learn, trained in all sorts of things, Russell Barkley on speed dial, all that sort of thing. But, you know, I found it was kind of a glass half empty world. I was told a lot of things that my kids were not going to be able to do or disasters that would befall them. You know, they were going to drop out of school as smart as they were, statistically likely, you know, they're going to get in trouble, drink alcohol, do drugs, drive recklessly, and statistically more likely to get divorced. It was kind of a bummer getting all that information as I was like 8 months pregnant and then postpartum with my littlest guy when I was getting all this information. But I met a lot of great people and I did learn a lot of really great strategies and stuff. But when I had my pivotal moment, and started looking through the gifted world through Sang, Supporting the Emotional Needs of the Gifted, and 2-Week Newsletter on all of the strength-based positive reframe ways of looking at the world, my whole life shifted and changed. And now I bring that to the world. So, you know, you talked about bringing out the best and raising self-esteem. That's sort of my mantra. With understanding comes calm. That's my mantra. And so I bring this to people. I sit down with clients, and the most frequently said comment is, oh, it is just so good to talk to somebody who gets it and then like sees positive stuff in my kids. And that is really what I do, because it's just so easy to harp on what these kids or we can't do, what our limitations are, how hard it is. Okay, really important, but let's start at the strengths. Let's start at the talents. Let's look at what these kids can do. I got an email actually this morning from, I don't even know where she's from, a teacher, a gifted pullout teacher, saying, I have this kid in my class describing this really difficult and intense behavior and how he went to this one class for math and he totally connected with the teacher, but another teacher's kid was also in that class. And so for the following year, that teacher requested that this challenging kid, in quotes, not be in the class with him. So the kid wasn't in the class with him, and now the kid is like totally out of control. Total bummer, right? So if I had been in that case, I would have been all about, and I wrote to her, but I thanked her so much for sharing this story with me. She's asking for help, like, what can we do for this kid? Like, what do we do now? And I'm not even sure she realized she included such important details in her email to me. And I just said, you know, at the end of the day, besides the fact that we need to focus on this kid's strengths, somebody's got to get a personal connection with him and figure out what makes him tick and what ticks him off and all the things that I always say. But I also said, you know, every time this kid is in a classroom, it is the most amazing moment in time for that teacher to be a role model on empathy, acceptance, understanding. So important. And that turns the whole system on its head with their behavior plans and their detentions and their keeping in from recesses and their punishments, you know? And so I like to say that I give parents permission to parent differently and I give teachers permission to teach differently.
Yeah, it's funny you were talking about the, I forget the word you said, but kind of negativity bias or whatever of the ADHD world. It's funny when glass half empty, yeah. But what's funny is when I look at the communities online, you know, the gifted communities and the ADHD communities that I'm in, I actually find it almost the opposite. I find that in the gifted communities, a lot of them focus on the negative, challenging parts of it. And in the ADHD communities, I think maybe it's more of a humor thing. There's like, they kind of take it, they look at both, you know, the good as well. I mean, there's definitely challenges in both settings, but I actually find it the other way in when I look at online communities that I've been in. It's kind of funny.
So that's really interesting, and I have a theory about that. ADHD is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Could anything sound worse? So we better be positive. Gifted, in the gifted world, we get all sorts of backlash about gifted and how everybody's gifted and everybody should be gifted and how could you possibly think that your kid is better than my kid, which is not what people are saying in the gifted world, right? You get this whole pushback on elitism. So it's human nature. We're trying to tell everybody, this isn't so easy, people, you know? So I don't know if but I renamed ADHD in a blog. I call it hyperattention activity deficit. as well, because they can pay attention to so many things at the same time and need to move. So, you know, but that's interesting you say that. And when I talk about glass half empty, I mean the learning. I'm not talking about the people who are living it. I'm talking about the learning and what you read about and what you have to do and how you address it. And it doesn't, it's not so many people are saying embrace the creativity of ADHD. Some people definitely are saying that. And man, that ADHD brain is awesome for a lot of things. But not a lot of, there are more people who are doing that, but not a lot. Ned Hollowell's a great, great guy on that.
Yeah. What do you think has helped you the most with harnessing the power of your own intensity?
Well, running is good. Breathing is good. Mindfulness is good. Meditating is good. I really love to crochet. That's good. I haven't had time to do that in a long time. Writing. Writing is really good. Enjoying the moment, being present and appreciating what you are doing right now, what's in front of you. So my kids' faces, you know, I just stop and sit on their bed or at dinner or sometime just getting out of your own head and looking at, getting out of your own computer, getting out of your own screen and looking at what's right in front of you.
What do you think is the best advice anyone ever gave you?
So I love that question.
Some people hate it.
Yeah, well, I love that question because it's easy for me. So we like easy things, I guess. My mom said to me when I was a new mom, she said, Julie, if you believe in what you're doing for your kid is the best thing, then it's the best thing. And it's the best thing because you're going to feel good about your decision and your kid is going to pick up on how you feel about what you're doing. So I think that was really great advice, particularly the part two of that, realizing that all the self-doubt that we do and self-criticism we do to ourselves, that that doesn't just affect us and that that corollary is true. If we feel really good about what we're doing, if we're making a choice, and hey, you know, you can make a choice and feel good about it and be wrong. And that's okay too. That's okay too. That's role model material. That's awesome role model material. You know, so I think that, that was really great advice.
Are there any particular habits, personal habits, that help you use your fire in a positive way?
Well, I guess some of what I said about the self-care of running and meditating and breathing and crocheting, I think connecting with people, I think not being afraid to say how I feel and not being afraid, again, there's this tightrope that we walk of modulating our incredible gifts that the world calls intensity. I think I've really worked on and believe in positive self-talk. That is so important, particularly for women, I think, but probably for everybody, but I am a woman, so I can speak to that. So I think positive self-talk is really, really important.
Are there any particular books that have had the most influence on you?
I love Ross Green at livesinthebalance.org. And Lost at School is one of my favorite books. Blessing of the Skin Knee is another great book. And A Parent's Guide to Gifted Children. I have all these resources on my website with understandingcomescom.com. To Be Gifted and Learning Disabled by Sue Baum and Robin Shader. And Lord of the Flies. my favorite book growing up. I love that book, and it's just so fascinating.
And you know, it's funny looking at a lot of the books, especially in gifted publishing, they don't even have them on Kindle, which I realize, like, from a 2E perspective is not particularly accessible because for me, I have a hard time sitting down and reading a paper book, but I can listen to things more easily. And so some books, having it read to you is if it's a Kindle version, is hard to slog through, but certain books, like Paula Prober's book, for example, was interesting enough that I was able to listen to the Kindle version being read to me. And so I was actually just having a conversation at Sang with the publishing.
Great potential.
About that. But now I need to follow up on that because there, so many of their books are not even on Kindle. I would love to make that happen because I think it increases their accessibility.
That's a really great point. That's a really great point. And Paula Prober's awesome, so I'm glad you read her book.
Yes, yes. She was one of my early interviews and one of my most popular.
Awesome.
So how do you help others to use their own fire?
Well, I think some of it has to do with being a really good listener. I think when we're faced with intense people, I mean, when you're faced with intensity, right, your neurons get all excited. And so we might have a response, a natural response to, you know, walk away, close our ears, close our eyes, whatever it is when there's an intense experience for our senses. But when people, you know, we say sometimes if we're talking about kids, when they go up, we go down, drop the rope, that type of thing. If you can just make it not about you, somehow dampen your own responses and you can let that person be in the moment and be in the moment with them. Mm-hmm. I think that that is helpful. That's when somebody is coming at you either with exuberance or with other very, very intense emotions. Mm-hmm. But as far as helping other people to harness or use their intensity for good, again, it's just encouragement. It's the Carol Dweck praising the process, naming what you're seeing that you're appreciating, mm-hmm. using verbs to describe what is so positively affecting you about or could affect other people positively about what they're doing or they're saying or they're believing.
I'm glad you mentioned Carol Dweck. I was at a conference a couple of years ago and someone was like trashing the whole concept of growth mindset from in a gifted conference because they felt like it dismissed the gifted factor. And I think I totally disagree. I think actually from a gifted perspective, we need that growth mindset even more because if we get it stuck in that, like, this is my ability, then we don't stretch ourselves.
Yeah, I'm wondering what context they were talking about because, I mean, I talk about praising the process all the time with my clients as far as even, I love this story, when my son was, I think, 15. He is 15, but I think it was last year. So he was 14 or 15. He came home from freshman year in high school and he did a whole bunch of stuff. And I was like, dude, you put your lunch away. You sat right down and got on the computer. You're like managing your homework. And he was like, thanks, Mom. And then he looked at me and he goes, Mom, you know, you should do that stuff with your clients. And I mean, it's all about like noticing people. Nobody notices anybody anymore. So that growth mindset has to do with, you know, the way that I use it is helping clients recognize with their kids, with their spouses, because I also mentor 2E adults, things that they do that you appreciate, but not by saying thank you, but by calling out, shining a light on what they're doing. And by the way, that's how I positively reframe a lot of stuff, because I shine the light on what they're not doing. So for the kid who ran out of the classroom and everybody was aghast and up in arms and, oh my God, and how are we going to punish him? I was like, dude, what an awesome strategy. You knew you needed to get out of that classroom. Mm-hmm. Boy, you didn't have a tantrum. You didn't disrupt. You didn't say anything rude. You didn't. I, you know, and it's like, wow, okay, that's a totally different way of looking at things. So yeah. I like that mindset.
Yeah, and in that case, I think it was a misinterpretation to some degree of it.
Yeah,
but
I think
it was because they felt like it was being used to say that all, that everyone has the same potential. I think that's what they were trying to say. But because, you know, the basis of it is that your growth mindset, you know, has more effect on your success than your innate ability necessarily. So I think we're not necessarily starting from the same starting point, but if you don't feel that you have growth potential or you just feel like your innate talents is all you have, then you don't learn to stretch yourself. And I think that's one of the hardest things for me observing, you know, even in my own life and my kids' life, and that ability to do hard things because so much comes easy than when things would get hard, especially when you add in that 2E attention component. So the ability to actually do hard things is really a stretch.
It can be. It can be. That's for sure, which is why catching them doing well is really important. Mm-hmm.
So is there anything else that you would like to share with the Embracing Intensity audience?
Well, I guess the most important piece or line of discussion that we've had, Aurora, and thank you very much because this has been really fun, is really that being true to yourself and kind to yourself and forgiving to yourself, because I think just the word intensity, you know, I often talk about overexcitabilities and how everybody thinks they're a bad thing because they're over, right? They're too much. But the truth is it's a way of being and it can be incredibly fulfilling. And so learning from people around us when our extraordinary gifts called intensity becomes a little bit too much for other people, learning from that and not taking it always personally and feeling bad about things that we say or do, being able to really be authentic to yourself and know that this is who you are, and to keep that goal in mind, what your goal is, so that you can be your best true self without apologizing, feeling like an imposter, not being able to fulfill your thought or feeling or emotional needs.
And I agree on the overexcitable thing, which is why I started using the term highly excitable in my work, because I feel like using the term over does imply too much.
Yeah.
So how can they find out more about you?
Thank you for asking. So there's a whole lot of ways. You can go to my website, which is withunderstandingcomescalm.com. My email is julie@withunderstandingcomescalm.com, J-U-L-I-E. You can subscribe to the newsletter, Gifted and Distractible, at the bottom of any page of my website. And for the 2 days of 2E virtual conference, actually, we just extended our 2 days of 2E virtual conference launches October 26th and 27th. It's really an exciting, sort of groundbreaking moment, I feel, where we're going to have content, community, and collaboration, where we're going to have 12 thought leaders in 2E talking about all sorts of incredible topics. We're going to have community building discussion forums for parents and teachers, and we're going to have an exhibitor hall with all sorts of resources for people to interact with and learn about. So we launch October 26, 27, will be evergreen or on demand through April 2019. And those are a lot of different ways to get in touch and learn about us.
Awesome. Well, it was so great to talk to you. Thanks for your flexibility and fitting this in your schedule.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Looking for ways to embrace your own intensity? I've got two free tools on embracingintensity.com to help you start your journey of self-exploration. My Find Your Superpower course, where you can explore your own unique brand of excitability and identify what it looks like when your power is well harnessed. And a free retreat planner to help you plan out your own personal self-exploration retreat. You can also join our Facebook community, the League of Excitable Women, where you'll meet a growing group of like-minded women, non-binary folk, and femmes who get what it's like to be highly excitable and are committed to creating a supportive community. If you'd like to support the production of Embracing Intensity, you can become a patron on Patreon and receive tools such as Done For You Personal Retreat Guides and my Ignite Your Power course. All links can be found in the show notes on embracingintensity.com.